Right. Hello, everyone. My name is Jordan Carter, one of the three co-chairs for the CCWG. Welcome to this meeting of the CCWG Accountability held on 28th of September, 2017 at 19:00 UTC. For the purposes of some of the normal preliminaries of these meetings, we're sort of regarding this as a follow-on from yesterday's meeting. If you have had a shocking change to your statement of interests between today and yesterday, please let the staff know. We worked through the expected standards of behavior at the start of yesterday's call, so we won't repeat that. The one preliminary I will do is to say that if you have a sorry, I've completely lost my place. If you're on the phone only, you are not on the Adobe Room, and we just need to know who you are for the purposes of the call log. The attendees on this, please let us know now if you're on the phone only.
Hello, this is Jorge Cancia. I'm trying to get into the Adobe Room, but for the time being, I'm only on the phone. I'm entering now the Adobe Room.
Okay. Thanks for letting us know, Jorge.
Okay, thanks.
The other reminder I'll just give you is that because we've had a lot to get through and we didn't know how long all these calls would take, we have a two-minute timer on interventions. What we will be doing at this call is picking up the agenda from yesterday. We're going to start with the Ombudsman subgroup, the first reading of the draft recommendations from there, and then we will move on to the human rights first reading. Welcome, whatever time of the day or night it is for you. Thank you for taking the time to participate in this call. And I will hand over to my fellow co-chair, Thomas Rickett, to take us through with the subgroup, the Ombudsman first reading. Thomas, over to you.
Thanks very much, Jordan. And I think I should also note that professional duties kept our dear co-chair Leon from joining this call. We hope that he will be able to join later before we end this call. Now, the first topic for today is the Ombudsman report. So I'd like to give a warning to Sébastien de Bachelet to get ready to talk us through the slides. And what I should also mention is that we have reserved 2 hours for this call. And as you know, we have an additional 2 extraordinary calls scheduled. So what we planned to do is take all the time to do a diligent job running through the recommendations, both on Ombudsman as well as human rights. And if we can't get the job done today, we're going to use the next reserve slot. And if that slot does not suffice to get us through the work, then we're going to have the second extraordinary call to come. But on the other hand, if we manage to go through the reports today, and if all questions are answered, then we can actually cancel the 2 additional slots that we've asked you to pencil into your diaries. Now, I see that Caboose's hand is up, so I'll go to Caboose, and after that we're going to go to Sébastien for the presentation. Caboose, please.
Yes, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, good time to everyone. If the Ombudsman would not turn against me, last night you promised that tonight we'll have about 1 hour, but on the Ombudsman, I don't think that you can go further. I told you that I am a flight tomorrow morning, early morning, and I don't want to miss. So I think you planned additional meeting. Please take every possible effort to make it for 1 hour, but not more than that. This is what you said last night. Please read what you said. Thank you.
Yes, Caboose, I think we can go back to the transcript, and you will find that we've acknowledged your request, but we have scheduled this call for 2 hours quite a while ago, and everyone has planned for 2 hours. But having said that, let's see how far we can get in an hour, and we will not discuss longer than we have to in order to get HR and Ombudsman done. So with that, let's now go to Sebastian. The floor is yours, Sebastian.
Thank you very much, Sebastian Bachelet speaking. Thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Jordan, and hello to everyone. I will try to do my presentation as quick as possible to allow time for discussion. Then, may I suggest that you give me the end for the presentation, like that I can go from one slide to the other. If not, please go to the next slide. Thank you. Okay, I will go quickly to the external review of the ICANN Ombuds Office. Then I will talk about what's the overlap with some recommendation of other workstream to subgroup regarding the Ombuds function. And then we will go through the report for the first reading by this plenary session, and of course I will try to answer any of your questions, and if I am not able to, I am sure that some of my fellow colleagues from the subgroup will do that. Thank you very much. Okay, as you remember, on the 6th of June, we present to you the recommendation made by the external review of the ICANN Ombuds Office, and we take this recommendation as an input in our work. We got 11 recommendations, but I would like to go first to quite quickly to the conclusion of the Ombuds external review. The Ombuds function is valued and provides an essential safety valve for fairness. It does, however, meet all expectations with a number feeling that it does not have enough power or independence. There is no single model that can be readily applied to the ICANN Ombuds function, and that to deliver confidence in fairness and to meet the range of expectations, it will need to adopt a multifaceted approach. The current Ombuds function is close to what is needed, but could use some reconfiguring and strengthening. We also consider some of the suggestions that are being floated for non-complaints work, and that could be given to the Office of the Ombuds. I will go to the next slide. It's not yet the next slide. In the executive summary, the external reviewer have identified five areas for improvement, and this clarifying role and process, manage expectations, standing and authority, strengthen independence, strengthen transparency, and policy for not dispute role. Report was given with 11 specific recommendations. I will not go through now as you have had this on the 6th of June. But as you will see, there will be we are very close in our recommendation to what was proposed and suggested by the external review. But first, let's go to some discussion about the overlap with recommendation of other Workstream 2 subgroup. And I will go first. The SON AC accountability. I will not read all what it's here, but it facts it to say that the Ombuds Office can play the role that subgroup wanted to be done, and not IRP, as IRP was too heavy and difficult. And During the discussion of the SOAC accountability, both myself and the current ombuds, we are trying to, we say that even currently, without any change after our work as a work stream two, the SONAC can ask the ombuds office to help them with any complaints. The other was a transparency subgroup, and there were recommendation 13, and what the role of the ombudsman can be regarding the publication or non-publication of any document within ICANN. The recommendation 19 is the ombudsman mandate regarding the DIDP should also be boosted to grant the office a stronger promotional role, including by integrating understanding of transparency and the DIDP. DIDP stands for document, the publication. I'm sorry to use those acronyms without knowing by heart what it means, but it's a question about publication by ICANN staff when we ask them to do so. The question of how it will be published and what could be the role of the ombuds in this arena. And now I guess we have done all, it was the two main topic. If you think that there are other subgroups with any overlap, we try to follow what's happened in the other subgroup, but if we miss something, please come to us and tell me and tell staff and Bernard in particular what we have missed in that, and we will try to include that in a next version of the document. Then, if you agree, let's go to what is in our proposal as a first report for, or as a report for the first reading of the CCWG on the content plenary. And we first of all we wanted to approve the objectives. The ICANN Ombuds Office subgroup approves the objective of all the recommendations made by the external evaluators, but did modify some of the implementation requirements to allow for more flexibility and speed in implementation, especially when considering bylaw changes. To be clear here, we try to write our recommendation without changing too much the idea, but to in helping not to have bylaw changes. Maybe we will need one day to have bylaw changes to ascertain some of our recommendation, but we think that in the first end and for the first step, it's not needed. And I can work with our recommendation without changing the bylaw right now. Propose recommendation, I guess we have 9 pages, but 11 recommendation. And in this first page, we have the ombuds office should have a more strategic role. Focus, and the second is the ombuds office should include procedures that distinguish between different categories of complaints and explain how each will be handled, set out a kind of matter where the ombuds will usually not intervene, and where this matter are likely to be referred to another channel with the complainant permission, provide illustrative example to deepen understanding of the ombuds approach. I don't know, but I suggest that I go through the full presentation and we open the Q&A at the end. But if the co-chair wants me to do something differently, just tell me and I will do it. Let's go to the next slide. The recommendation number 3, ICANN has agreed to a revised configuration for the Office of the Ombudsman. A plan should be developed for a soft relaunch of the function, would incorporate action to emphasize the importance of the Ombuds function by all relevant parts of ICANN, including board, CEO, community groups, and complaints officer. Let's go to next page. All relevant parts of ICANN should be required. This should include the corporation, the board and committees, and anybody or group with democratic or delegated authority to respond within 90 days or 120 days for reason to a formal request or report from the Office of the Ombuds. Next.
Sebastian, slide. Before you start talking to the next slide, I guess every couple of slides, we should pause briefly and ask whether there are questions. So let us just give folks the opportunity to ask questions or comment. So if you have questions or comments on what Sebastian has presented so far, please do make yourself heard or raise your hand. Okay, that doesn't seem to be the case. I just want to make sure that we don't
throw one
at the participants.
You have two now,
Thomas.
We have two now, so Milton goes first, and then Laurie. And just before we hear the first speaker, a general rule would be that we would like you to make comments on the slides or the recommendations referred to in the slides and wait with other comments until later. Okay, Milton and then Laurie.
Hello. This is Milton Mueller.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm curious about the general level of authority, the things that can be brought to the ombudsman from the SOs and ACs. I'm hoping this does not include policy matters. We're just talking about, when you put him in the position of a substitute for the IRP, this sounds very strange for me. The IRP is a quasi-judicial entity that decides whether ICANN has violated its bylaws. The ombudsman is, up to now, has been very sort of non-rule-based, discretionary kind of mediation and discussion function, and I'm just really uncomfortable with the whole idea of putting the ombudsman in the position of a arbitrator, unless we know exactly what rules that person is arbitrating and what kinds of appeals mechanisms there will be for the ombudsman, particularly since the ombudsman is simply really a person hired by the board.
Thanks, Milton.
If I may, Thomas Sebastian Bachelet speaking. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Milton. First of all, I think it's important to remind everybody that the role of the ombuds is not changing, that there is no binding decision on ombuds. It's suggesting a way to solve the complaints between the two people, two parties, whatever. Here the question was in the SOAC accountability, how to handle complaint between one SO to another SO, one AC to another SO, whatever. It was much too heavier than to go to IRP and more costly. What is important at the end is that there is no binding decision. The ombuds is just suggesting. And if you can wait also for the recommendation number 11, where we will go through some of the case where it's not a complaint as such and how it could be handled, we have a proposal for that. But be sure that the goal here is not to change the role of the ombuds regarding the way he will help to solve the complaint. Thank you.
Sebastian, before we move to Laurie, Milton has asked a follow-up question in the chat, which I'm going to read out for you. So he's saying, oh, so that's not an accountability function, it's about personal disputes?
I think it's not just, it could be between groups, and it's not just a personal dispute, and I will not try to talk on behalf of the SO and AC accountability, because in fact the question you are raising, Milton, here, it will be much more better handled by the three, by the co-rapporteur of the SO AC accountability than by me as a rapporteur of the ombuds. What we handle and we wanted to be sure that if this subgroup and they ask for ombuds to do something, that we handle it in the right way. Thank you.
Okay. Sebastian, there's a lot of comment in the chat, and there seems to be some concern that the ombudsman or the ombuds could actually take decisions relating to policy issues or by policy decisions made by an SO. I understand that you are referring to the co-chairs, the rapporteurs, the co-rapporteurs of the SOAC accountability group to answer that question, because I think that the group wishes to get the clarification on the mandate of the ombuds. And
May I add one point? I want really to be sure how the ombuds is working. The ombuds is not taking decision, is suggesting tasks to find to pass to solve the issue between two complainants. Two complainants could be two people or two groups or whatever. And there's no decision making by the ombuds. But I will be happy to have one of the co-rapporteur of the SOAC accountability, they wish to talk about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. And what I suggest we do is we put this question into the notes section. I guess the question really is whether it would be within the scope or the mandate of the ombuds to take a look at policy decisions or disputes between SOs and ACs on policy matters. And if that weren't the case, I guess the group would appreciate a clarification that the ombuds doesn't get involved in those cases. Now, we don't want to put the co-rapporteurs for the SOAC group on the spot, so this is just an early warning that at the end of Sebastian's presentation, we're going to ask the rapporteurs of the SOAC group to clarify their request, and then hopefully we will be able to clarify things for the whole group. Let's now move to Laurie and then Kavis.
Hello, Laurie Schulman for the record. Just to note, in terms of this conversation, my understanding was more along the lines of comments described in the chat or in the transcription, that this is about disputes about actions or behaviors, but not policy specifically. That being said, my comments go to some of the drafting of the language specifically on the slide, that I perhaps it would be clarifying to note with number 5, the ICANN Office of the Ombudsman should establish KPIs for its own handling of complaints. I might suggest that we add KPIs based on best business practices. I think KPIs, you can fall down a rabbit hole particularly when it comes to an ombudsman-type office? Are we talking about numbers of actions? Are we talking about qualities of decisions? So I think it might be helpful to include some benchmarking language in number 5. And in number 6, the Office of the Ombudsman should be configured so that it has formal mediation training and experience with its capabilities. There's a part of me that says it seems obvious, but in a case it's not obvious, perhaps a classification here as well, so that it has formal mediation training on a continuing basis or a renewing basis to make sure that whatever the Ombudsman is being trained to mediate is, again, against a standard of best practice and with renewed professional training. Same thing with its experience. I don't know. I'm not sure experience within its capabilities actually would designate. That seems very broad to me. But I might think about maybe narrowing that language a little bit.
Thanks very much, Lori. Sebastian, any response to that?
Yeah, I was going to say a KPI, it's a key performance indicator, Milton. It's a standard. KPIs can be numbers, quantitative numbers, or they can be qualitative goals, but qualitative goals are much harder to measure, which is why I get a little concerned about measuring what the ombudsman does, because a KPI is typically something quantitative, not qualitative.
Okay, Sebastian, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sebastian Bachelet speaking. Thank you, Larry, for your inputs. I have two thoughts on that. The first one is that we try to summarize the recommendation, but of course, in the report, and specifically in the report of the external reviewer, it's explained in deeper format, and therefore, I guess what you are asking, it's written there. But may I suggest that we take your two inputs back to the subgroup as it's the first reading, and we will discuss that and make the change accordingly if the group wish so. And I don't see any reason why not from my point of view, but I am just a reporter. I am not the one, only the one to decide. But I guess it could be useful to go back to our taking into account your point of view. But I don't think it changed in the meaning, and it gave more precise element, and why not? Thank you.
Sebastian, before we go to Cavus, let me just offer a proposal, i.e., that we are going to collect the points that need some changes to the draft language in front of us, or in the recommendations that you submitted, and the decision whether or not this needs to be sent back to the subgroup to work will need to be made at the end. If it's just cosmetic things or clarifications that don't change the substance of the report, we might be able to make this a successful reading and just do some minor edits in between the first and the second reading. Okay, so I suggest that we postpone this decision until a little bit later. And now we're going to go to Cavus. Afterwards, the queue is closed, and we allow for Sebastian to continue his presentation. Cavus.
Thank you very much, Thomas, and thank you, Sebastian. I am very sorry I was not able to follow your activities. I appreciate very much what you have done. First of all, I have a general comment. Reference is made in numerous areas to complaint. Complaint is a very broad and general term. So we have to be a little bit more serious about complaint. What is within the scope of complaint? Complaint on what? Complaint of sanitary, complaint of water, complaint of what? Complaint of one SO against one AC, complaint of one staff against another staff, complaint of one staff against his supervisor, complaint of one board against another board, complaint of one board against the whole board. So are we going to make the Office of Ombudsman to be a speaker of the gut, or spokesman of the God. I think we should be very, very careful and try to facilitate the process of the ICANN or community rather than complicating the situations. This is one point. The other point is, in a process, suppose that we have CCWG, and we have another one for auction, we have another one that, within that CCWG, there are sometimes disputes between the people. Is the ombudsman authorized to get involved in the dispute of two people because of the discussion that they have, or that is, you should leave it to the group, to the chair of the group, and not get involved the ombudsman? So we have to be quite clear. One, what is the definition and the scope of ombudsman? How it covers and what are not included in the ombudsman office activities and so on and so forth. We should not mix up. We should not create something overriding of everything, and we should be quite careful. So I'm not quite clear about the situation. Could you please kindly clarify if I'm mistaken, if I'm not properly thinking of the matter, to see what do you mean by complaint? What is the scope of complaint? And what are the areas that ombudsman shall not really be involved at all? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kavuz, and thanks for sticking to the two-minute limit that we agreed earlier. Sebastian, would you care to respond to that point?
Thank you, Thomas Ambassador speaking, and thank you, Carlos, for your question. I understand completely, because we have nine groups, and to follow everything, it's almost impossible, or at least you have just one superman and superwoman who can do that, but it's very difficult. I would like to suggest that, Carlos, that if you read even the current role of the ombuds, it's quite clear what is the complaint and how it's handled. And yes, we know that now we have a second office, or a second office taking care of a complaint is within the staff. Ombuds, it's outside, it's higher by board. But I guess the definition of the ombuds function is quite clear. And we are just trying to specify some and add some in the little scope of what is Workstream 1 and Workstream 2 about accountability. But be sure that the goal is not to, to have something becoming too big. And I hope that it answers the question. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sebastian. And since the queue is clear, I would I'd like to ask you to continue with the presentation of your slides. I would suggest we do like three of them so that we have another chunk of recommendations to discuss.
Okay. I guess we have also discussed five and six, than the first three pages, and I for this because it was already read and discussed by one of the participants. I guess it was Stephanie, but I don't need to read it again, I hope. But if you have comments, I will be happy to answer. If we go to the recommendation number 7, the office of the ombuds should be ideally configured, subject to practicality, so that it has gender and, if possible, other form of diversity within its staff resources. The primary objective of this recommendation is to ensure that the community has choice as to whom in the ICANN ombuds office they can bring their complaints to and feel more comfortable doing so. Maybe I can suggest that we go one by one, because I know that there will be some discussion on the 8. Maybe it's better to clear off this number 7 if there are any comments or questions. But you are the boss, and I am in your hands. Thank you.
that's kind of you to say, but this is a joint responsibility, Sebastian. So thanks for suggesting that. I have seen that Cavus's hand is still open since we discussed the last recommendation, so I trust it's an old hand. Do we have any comments on this very recommendation? Farzani, go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you. Farzani Badi speaking. What is ombuds should be configured subject to practicality for gender. How is it not, why are we subjecting it to practicality? So I know what is going to happen. We are going to have a call for hiring ombuds, and then we are going to get a couple of women and a couple of men, and then there's going to be, in the end, we are going to pick the guy because, oh, subject to practicality. I think, especially because ombuds office is responsible for very sensitive issues, we should have one man and one woman in the office. There's no practicality here. For diversity in region and other things, I understand. Well, I don't understand diversity in gender. I just wanted to make my point. I don't know how the group wants to go ahead with this, but that's what I'm saying.
Thanks, Fazi. I see that there's support from Anne. Let's wait for more comments to come in. Tatiana is supporting this. Chris Seaburn is supporting it. Sebastian, I haven't followed all the discussions in your sub-team. Has this question been discussed in your team? And then we'll move to
your hand raised. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. Thank you, Thomas. I guess, and thank you, Fazi, for your question. I guess here it's, you know, if you want to have gender equality, if you are an even number, it's not possible, then it's such type of practicality. It's not too much to discuss what we can, if we want to have diversity, but at the end of the day, once again, if we have three, we have two and one, then it's not equality. But what is important here, and from my point of view, is that we ask that if there are two, at least one is a man, one is a woman, to specifically about the question of harassment, not to be obliged to go to the office of complaints within the staff. That's the idea of what was discussed with the external reviewer, that's why it's written like that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. We have a queue forming, Cheryl and then Jeff.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Cheryl Langdonell for the record. I can assure you, Thomas, diversity with Sebastian and I in the group, at least, was well and truly discussed and considered. It was a primary point made not only during the external examiner's review process, but also in our group's deliberations. And I want to just point out to you all that this, in fact, was intended to be a statement in support of diversity. And as Sebastian said, the subject of practicality on equity, for example, on gender, is one of a matter of odd or even numbers. I mean, I put in the chat, obviously, if there's one, it's, well, I guess we can find some people with sufficient gender diversity, even if it is only one, but that might be a little difficult from time to time. If there's three, for example, or five in the office, then a 50-50 split is somewhat challenging. However, it is designed in this state, this statement, for us to say that female gender needs to be a priority when the opportunity is there for it to be there. At the moment, we've had a history of male ombudspersons. I would like to think that this is an indicator that this is slated to change, and that as we do look towards things like harassment policies, we should note that even without gender diversity in the Office of the Ombuds Office was very supportive and very active in developing a harassment policy. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. Jeff?
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman. I want to disagree, but not for the reasons that you might think. The way it was worded, they said if there were two, then one should be a man and one should be a woman. I don't think we should be so limiting. I mean, if the two most qualified are women, then both should be women, right? I think we should not dictate half and half. I kind of like the way that Cheryl worded it, which is to ensure that there's gender diversity, which, by the way, you know, in this day and age, there are some that don't associate with a gender. So the main point is there should be gender diversity. There should be at least one woman in the ombudsman office to handle those sensitive complaints. But I don't think we should be getting into 50-50 split. I think there should be diversity mixed with quality, and if that means more women than men, then all for it. So I'm good with that. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Jeff. Now the question is what we make out of this. I saw a lot of support in the chat for the idea of gender diversity. Jeff, when you made your comment about having two women possibly, there was a comment that this would be as non-diverse as having two men. So I'm wondering whether we need to change language to be more precise with respect to gender diversity, because that seems to be getting a lot of traction instead of using the term practicality. I hope I'm getting this right in the sense of what people are wishing. And Fazi's hand is up, so Fazi, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, Thomas, you just said what I wanted to say. I think if the wording in the document, and I haven't looked yet, in the document is subject to practical, right here it's written. So ombud should be configured subject to practicality, so it has gender, if possible, other forms of diversity, then I don't think that is the right way to put it. What we should put in is that we should eliminate subject to practicality for gender. That's what we should do. We should say there is a need for gender diversity ombud office, and subject to practicality, other forms of diversity be considered.
Thanks, Fazi. Let's hear Kavuth and then try to draw a conclusion. Kavuth, it's your turn. Please go ahead.
Thomas, I believe that we could delete subject to practicality, and we should not go to the detail of one man and one woman. Sometimes maybe we have two women, they are quite capable. Why we go to that level of detail? We just refer to the gender diversity, but not going further than that and not put any qualification subject to availability, subject to practicality, subject to quality, competence. We do not go that much detail. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kavuth. Jeff, is that a new hand or an old hand? So the hand is now lowered. Sebastian, since you are the rapporteur for this group, would you like to make some final comments on this or propose a way forward?
I guess reading the change in the chat and having the we agree on the objective, then I did really, the idea was today we have just one ombudsperson, and then it's why we had subject of practicality. But as our goal in the whole report is to have an office of ombuds, and that we have more than one person, I guess we can put out the subject to practicality as it is written, and we can have the following: the office of the ombuds should be ideally configured so that it has gender and, if possible, other form of diversity. And I guess I don't see any trouble from my point of view, and we don't need to struggle for three words, as we are agree with the goal here. But that's my suggestion, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. Let's just pause here for a second. I think that the proposal that you just made was so brief that it got an immediate, simple enough change from Cheryl as a response. So why don't we do a quick indication in the AC room from those who object to the clarification that Sebastian just proposed. So before we do that, I would like Sebastian to repeat the exact language of that sentence, and then we would proceed to requesting those who oppose to that change to make a red tick in the Adobe room. So, Sebastian, can you please repeat the language that you suggested?
Yes. Thank you, Thomas. Sebastian speaking. I suggest to take out of the sentence what it's into brackets, that subject of practicality, and that it, the sentence will be read as follows: the office of the ombuds should be ideally configured so that it has gender and, if possible, other form of diversity within its staff resources. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. So I see a green tick. Do we have any objection? So we would use our usual practice of establishing consensus or support by asking for objections. Support statements certainly don't do any harm, so please keep them up. But I do not see anyone objecting to that language. So I think that we have a way forward. So I would suggest that we keep that as one of the edits to the report and allow for Sebastian to walk us through the next recommendation.
Thank you, Thomas. Let's go, Sebastian Bachelet speaking. Let's go to next recommendation. It's the number 8. And the number 8 read as follows: ICANN should establish an ombuds advisory panel made up of 4-6 members to act as advisors, supporters, wise counsel for the ombuds, and could also advise the board governance committee, and board compensation committee with respect to ombuds related matters. The panel should be made of a minimum of 2 members with ombudsman experience and 3-4 members with extensive ICANN experience. The panel should be responsible for commissioning an independent review of the ombuds function every 3 to 5 years. That's the number 8, and I suggest that I pause here. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. Any comments? And Kavus is asking in the chat, Sebastian, I repeat again, which are the issues or areas that the ombudsman shall not intervene? So I would suggest that we hear Jeff, and Sebastian, then you could please comment on both Cavusa's question as well as respond to Jeff's intervention. Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I guess it's more of a question. So I understand the role of the panel. Sorry, I think someone else has their line open. I understand what the role of the panel for the review every 3 to 5 years. I don't really understand the support wise counsel for the ombudsman. And the reason I say that is the ombudsman, ombudsperson, may be in receipt of very sensitive information or a very sensitive matter. And I don't think that someone with ICANN experience, I guess if I had raised a complaint, a sensitive complaint, with the ombudsperson, I would not want someone from the ICANN community to have that information, or I may not want that. So I'm trying to figure out what the role of the advisory panel would be in terms of serving as, quote, wise counsel. That worries me a little bit.
Sebastian, now if you could please respond to Cavusa's point as well as to Jeff.
Okay. Cavusa's point, it's really, it will be, I guess, quite long because we are if I summarize, and it's only written like that in the ombuds page in the ICANN website. But to summarize, the ICANN ombuds has jurisdiction over complaints which arise from things which happen in the community. And it's if you read the first sentence after, the ombuds cannot make change or set aside a policy, administrative or board decision, act or omission, but may investigate these events and use some technique to resolve them and make recommendations as to changes. I don't think what is under discussion here will change this as the objective and the way the ombuds will work. If there were a proposal here to a plenary, a panel, it's because we were looking at how, with the current way of working, with the board being the I would say last resort, the one who hires the ombuds and the one who decide how much they want to pay the ombuds. We wanted to give less power and more independence, less power to the board and to have more independence to the ombuds office. It's why this is proposed. But in addition, I want to be really clear. When it's written wise counsel, it's not to counsel in any of complaints who are in front of the ombuds. The ombuds will stay, the confidentiality of the work of the ombuds will stay. This will not change. What it's at stake here is how we can increase the independence from the board and how we can help this office to answer better and be better organized, but it's not to work to replace the ombuds. The ombuds will have still his role and will play his role and not being done by this advisory panel. I hope that it's clear, and if not, ask again and I will try to be better. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. Let's now move to David.
Just one second. Yeah, one second. It's when I read, and I am sorry, Finn, to read that. with an unclear role. Yes, in one sentence, it's an unclear role, but in the report, it's not an unclear role. Or if not, you may decide that both the external reviewer and the subgroup have not done a right job, and it's I can accept that totally. But please, we have tried with the external reviewer to find a way to solve some of the issue about the independence of the Ombuds Office. Thank you.
Okay, David.
Thomas, thank you. It's David McCauley for the transcript. Sebastian, you may have answered this question. It's about the first bullet under number 8, a different facet than Jeff mentioned. And the language I'm looking at is that the this panel could advise the board to board committees with respect to ombuds-related matters. When I read that, I thought, that might create some confusion. And if it were to stand as a recommendation, it might be better that that happen when either the ombudsman or the board requests it, but not otherwise. But if this is just limited to non-substantive issues that the ombudsman has under review, I would feel less concerned about it. So maybe that's the case. But I was struck by that language and the possibility for confusion as to what advice or what recommendations are coming out of the ombudsman's office. So that's my question / comment. Thank you very much, and thanks to the team that worked on this.
Thanks, David. I suggest that we hear Caboose and Anne to Sebastian.
Thomas, I think the question I raised, I hope will be answered, but now I am a little bit confused about the definitions that ombuds or ombuds office deal with the complaint arising from the community. It is very, very broad. A registrant has a problem with registrar in country A. Do they come to the ombudsman? A registrant in country A has a problem with registrar in country B. It comes to the ombudsman. I don't think that that is the case. I don't think that is the purpose of ombudsman. We don't establish international court of justice and give it that court under the control of ombudsman of the ICANN. I don't understand this. Difficulties and complaints arising from the community is too broad. I don't think that that is the purpose. The ombudsman office was established many, many years ago when ICANN was very small, but now we want to do something quite clearly, and I don't think that that is the case, that the ombudsman giving such a very broad authority to do any difficulty and complaint arising within the community of 7 billion people in the world. This is the son of the God, the ombudsman. I don't agree with that. I'm very sorry.
Caboose, I guess it's certainly not for our group to create any sort of God, but as mentioned by a couple of commenters in the chat, the remit and role of the ombudsman remains unchanged. So if you had fears that the ombudsman could be a God-like person, that would already be the case today. So this was a tongue-in-cheek comment, certainly, but that's just to illustrate that the current role of the ombudsman, I think, has not led to those concerns to become true, and it's my understanding that the role shall remain the same. So we should not be afraid of mission creep other than potentially the clarification on the policy matters that we have discussed earlier and we will get back to at the end of the session. Anne, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you, Thomas. It's Anne Aikman-Scalise for the transcript, and I was not going to comment with respect to the breadth of the role, but I think it's pretty clear that from what Cheryl had pasted in the chat, that it certainly is not, quote-unquote, any difficulty. There can always be communication difficulties, and preferably they're worked out, you know, first between the people who are having the difficulty with each other. But unfair treatment is a bit of a different standard, and so I just want to reinforce what you and Cheryl and others have said about the current role of the ombudsman. I don't think it's the extreme case that Caboose is concerned about. The other thing, though, and the reason I raised my hand is I'm concerned about this council in the first portion of 8 doing a lot of cross one matter between the ombudsperson and the board, because what I think that is fraught with difficulty, because this advisory panel could be informally consulting the board on matters that the ombudsperson is investigating, and then there could be these informal, you know, grapevine conversations where there's an inappropriate influence on what's supposed to be an objective investigation. I mean, I could see the advisory panel advising the ombudsperson during the investigation, and then if, you know, something's reported to the board, and then the board asks the advisory panel, you know, some of their thoughts. But the notion that there's this triangle is it's what this looks to be, of a triangle of an advisory panel that can be advising the ombudsperson and advising the board at the same time and telling the ombudsperson what this or that board member said or didn't say, I think it's fraught with difficulty, especially regarding confidential matters. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Anne. And Sebastian, I guess that we should deal with this recommendation or with these proposed concerns as we did on the last recommendation, and that is to hopefully get some guidance from the plenary by means of a poll, i.e. an indication with a red tick in the Adobe room. So the question for the plenary would be, of keeping this idea of a panel, because I think that there is a lot of concern about creating additional panels, about the interaction between the board, the ombuds, and this panel, and also with using more community members for accountability-related work rather than substantive work. So let's try to find out whether there is opposition to this recommendation. And if you – oh, I'm sorry. I see Caboose's hand is up. Caboose, I'd really like to proceed to the poll. So if you could please keep it brief.
Let's get the other part of that and have some more comments, and that will be helpful for Sebastian to listen to all these comments and take them into account. That's all. Thank you.
Caboose, it may have been my line. I need to go to the – yeah, I'm now reading what you said in the transcript, so thanks for your comment. Let's now move to the poll. So if you do not like the idea of establishing a panel, please use the red tick. Please use the red tick if you do not like the idea of the panel. Let's pause for another couple of seconds. If you do not like the idea of a panel, tick red. Can I ask staff whether you have an indication of how many? Okay, so we have 11 out of 36, 15 red I am reading now. Okay, now we're going to do the opposite as a test of this testing of the water. So please clear your hand and or clear your status, I'm sorry. For those part of establishing advisory panel, please tick green. Those supporting the panel, please tick green. Just wait for another couple of seconds to make sure that those in favor had as much time as those against to indicate their view in the Adobe room. So Anne actually made a qualification to her support. So she wants to change it, but so that not advice is given to both the ombuds as well as the board at the same time for the same matter. So I think, and then your support needs to be construed as objection to the current proposal, right? I just want to make sure we understand this.
Yes, correctly. That's correct, Thomas. Sorry. Yes, that's correct.
Thanks very much. Okay, so what we can take from this is that we have far more individuals on this call expressing concerns with this. So it's 5 in favor, 15 against. So what I suggest is that for the subsequent discussion on this, we will remove this recommendation and test whether people want it back in. So we still keep it so that it can be reinserted. But for the time being, the status would be that the plenary does not support this recommendation. I see Jeff's hand is up. I trust that's a new hand. So, Jeff, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you. and it doesn't matter, I guess, in this instance, but when you do this poll, and I thought this was kind of telling, that those that said no came from a very diverse set of background groups. So I noticed that there were some registry members, some GAC members, some ALAC members. That was through my quick scrolling. So I think more important than numbers is that you're finding people from different backgrounds. Again, it doesn't matter in this case because there were a lot more no's, but in future, if it is close or even if one side looks like it's a lot more than the other, looking at the backgrounds of the persons is important in consensus. Thanks.
Jeff, I guess that's an excellent point. And you will remember that we had this discussion a couple of times only during the last call yesterday. I was asked to respond on the quorum and decision-making process, and I responded that we take a close look at who says what, i.e. from what backgrounds or what groups those who take a certain position represent. And your observation did not go unnoticed, so there was far broader community representation, i.e. diverse views or diverse groups represented from the community than in the pros. Thanks very much. That's very helpful. So I think we have a way forward on this one. So, Sebastian, can I ask you to move to the next recommendation?
I will do so. The Recommendation 9, the Ombuds employment contract should be revised to strengthen independence by allowing for a 5-year fixed term, including a 12-month probationary period and permitting only one extension of up to 3 years. The Ombuds should only be able to be terminated with cause. And I will read the number 9 if you wish so. And number 10, the Ombuds shall have a part of the annual business plan, the communications plan, including the formal annual report, publishing reports on activity, collecting and publishing statistics and complaints, train information, collecting user satisfaction information, and publishing systematic improvement arising from the Ombuds work. I will pause here. Thank you.
I see Farzaneh's hand is up. Farzaneh, go ahead.
Thank you, Thomas. Farzaneh speaking. So at the risk of being sounding like a broken record, I have said this multiple times on the mailing list, on the accountable to mailing list. The report lacks enough measures to maintain and fix independence of ombudsperson and ombuds office. The problem is not going to be solved by having a fixed-term contract. The problem should be solved by not having an ombuds office that its whole livelihood is dependent on ICANN. This is a very, very standard measure that has been done in various dispute resolution offices by the government and by the industry. The livelihood of the ombuds office, of the ombuds person, should not be dependent on ICANN. You can extend ICANN, you can extend ombuds person contract for a long time. That will not maintain their independence. And the other thing I have another 40 seconds to say this because I have to go. The other thing I have all the time, the ombuds persons, and at the moment it's only one person, should not socialize with the ICANN community, should not befriend them. It should truly be an office, not a person. And this has not, and people say that, oh, but you're saying that ICANN staff should not be socializing. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that, first of all, it should be an office, not a person. And second of all, it should be truly independent. You don't want to see the person you've complained to about another one is having a drink with the person you talk about. This has to be addressed in the report. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Fazi. Any further comments on this? Okay, I guess, Fazana, you've made this point a couple of times on the subgroups mailing list, and we should see how the plenary feels about this and whether there's support for your amendments. I see that Jeff's hand is up. Jeff, please.
Yeah, and this is Jeff Newman. I apologize for not having read the full report, and it may be already answered, so again, apologize if it's answered, but I raised a comment on the notion of for cause. Is that determined by the board, or is there a role that for the empowered community in some way to ratify that for cause to make sure it's not an ICANN staff/board determination?
Sebastian, I guess that's one for you.
Thank you. I am in trouble to answer this question because as we have changed the report with the recommendation number 8, my answer would have been, it is exactly the role of the panelists. Like that, it's not the board, it's not the staff, and it's not the employer community. Now, I have no clue on what you want us to do. But it's something we will need to work again. But maybe now with this question, you understand why we were suggesting, or not just we, but the external reviewer, with our agreement, we're suggesting this advisory panel. And for what Fazi have said, and yes, she wrote it, she told us in the subgroup, and we discussed, and I want to say that to discuss point of view, even when she was unable to participate to the call, you can go to the recording and you will see. And we have decided as a group to stay with what it's written here. It's not to say that we don't take into account this input as all the other input, but specifically the one from Fazi, we take it very seriously and we discuss it. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. So the, I guess in a nutshell, the response to the question on who makes the determination is it would be the board. And I think that the best way for us to see whether Fazane's suggested amendment gets sufficient traction for amending the recommendation is to check whether there is any opposition to accepting the recommendation as it stands now. Okay, so let me summarize this again so that it's abundantly clear. Those who like the recommendation as described by Sebastian, i.e. without the amendment suggested by Fazane, they do nothing. Those who think that Fazane's suggestions should be further discussed and potentially incorporated into the recommendation need to object to the recommendation as described by Sebastian. Okay? So I see that Jeff and Ellen have raised their hands, so I suggest we hear them first before proceeding to asking for objections. Jeff, please.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I'm not meaning to comment on that last part. What I was trying to do was come up with a, because Sebastian had posed an interesting question of, you know, now that we've decided to get rid of this panel, he's kind of lost for words a little bit in who could help with the determining for cause. And what I would say is if there is a recommendation by the board to terminate the ombudsman for cause, at that point in time, a panel can be convened to ratify that decision so that it is not solely a board decision to create some more independence. Milton brings up a good question as to who hires the ombudsman, but I'm not going to comment on that, but I think if there was a recommendation, like I said, to create this panel only for the sole purpose of ratifying this decision, I'd support that notion of a panel. No comment on the other proposal. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. I wasn't clear whether you're asking us whether we support the fact that a contract is not sufficient or the non-fraternization proposal. So if you could make it clear what you're asking us whether we agree with or not, that would be really appreciated, at least by me. And I really don't see any reason why we can't use green ticks and red crosses at the same time. Then we're simply eliminate the people who aren't saying anything, and we can compare the two. Thank you.
We can easily combine the two. So those who want to keep the recommendation as it stands by And as suggested by Sebastian, tick green. Those who object to it, please tick red. And just for clarity, this question relates to both aspects. So if you object to one or both of the recommendations as they stand on the fertilization as well as the term, then you need to tick red. And if you like the recommendation as it stands, you need to tick green. Before we proceed,
and we are talking about recommendation 9, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, it's Anne, and I have the same problem Alan does. I am not clear on the specific two issues that were raised. So I really need, I can't vote. I don't know, or poll, excuse me, we don't vote. What were they again?
Okay, let's hear Milton first, and then let me try to take another crack at clarifying this.
Yes, I do think people were a bit confused because you asked them to check, I think, green initially, that if they actually opposed the recommendations, and now we've switched to green for support, which makes more sense. But let me just explain why I think it's very premature to vote for these recommendations. And by voting against them, you're not necessarily voting for any specific counterproposal, because we don't know what that is yet. But I think Farzana made a completely correct point that I don't see how these recommendations improve the independence of the ombudsman at all. The ombudsman is working for ICANN's board. There's no sort of non-fraternization agreement in there. It's not an independent office, so it's not an external party that's being contracted with. And the fixed term, I mean, if it really is just a fixed term and they hire them and they have no sort of life or death power over their future employment, that's a step forward, but that's actually not what we have. We have a 12-month probationary period, clearly would be decided by the board, and then you get an extension for 3 years. So if you want to work for 8 years, and who doesn't want that kind of job security, you make sure the board likes you and you don't do anything that alienates them. So this is not independent. I just don't see how – I think we need to work on this more and come up with a better proposal for independence.
Okay, thanks, Milton. Let's not forget, these recommendations are based on the report done by external third party who makes a living comparing what ICANN has against industry standards, right? So this hasn't been made up by individuals that have never worked in the scene. Now, let me try to clarify again what the purpose of the polling is. Farzana made her comments with respect to recommendation 9, and she brought up 2 points, one of which on the term and one of which related to the fraternization of the ombudsman. So if you think that we need to neither revisit the term question nor the fraternization question, then you can express your support with a green tick for recommendation number 9. This is usual practice in our group. We ask whether you like the recommendation as it stands, and if there is objection to the recommendation, i.e. if you want the term question to be rediscussed, or if you want to have something included on fraternization, then you need to tick red, and that would either lead to drafting edits or to sending the recommendation back to the sub-team for further discussion. So let's now please proceed to the poll. So if you like the recommendation as it is, please tick green.
If you don't like it as it is, please tick red. And I'd like to ask Seb to count how many expressions of views we have on both sides.
Thomas?
Yes?
Are you asking the right question? The issue is not whether we want or we don't want recommendation. The issue is how we could ensure the full independence of the Ombudsman Office.
No, this is not the question. The question is whether the plenary supports the recommendation as it comes from the sub-team. So this is just a test whether the recommendation can be adopted as a first reading by the plenary or whether amendments are needed.
But the default is that if it is not accepted, that is what we have. We need to establish to have an independent ombudsman office. This is the question. You can ask who wants the independent or who doesn't want the independence? This is a question, but not recommendations. Thank you.
Caboose, we have received a report from the including recommendations, and what we do usually when we get these reports is see whether the plenary supports them. And this is exactly what we're doing at the moment. And if individuals think that there is not enough talk about independence in the recommendation, then the plenary can object to the recommendation and put it back to the sub-team for further review. Okay, but we have a very close race, and therefore I think we need to mark this recommendation as a recommendation that needs to be further discussed. Let me check with my co-chair, Jordan, whether he shares that view. Maybe you can give me an indication, but I think that this is neither clearly adopted nor clearly objected to, so I think that we need to hand this back over. Because, you know, as I think Jeff and others mentioned, it's not like they don't like aspects of it, but they want to reshape it. I think Milton also said that this needs further discussion, so let's mark this as an item that needs to be further debated in the sub-team in the light of the comments that we heard today. Okay, with that, we can move to the next point, and I'd like to ask you, Sebastian, to present recommendation number 10.
Thank you, Thomas. I get I already read it, but I can do it again.
I'm sorry. Then let's ask whether there are comments on recommendation 10. Let's pause for a second. If there aren't any, then we can move to the last recommendation. Okay, the queue is clear, so Sebastian, over to you for recommendation 11.
Thank you very much, Sebastian Bachelet speaking. But before I go to the recommendation 11, I want just to be sure about the language. I am just the rapporteur. I am reading the report of the ICANN Ombuds Office subgroup. And I want to be sure that when you say that what Sebastian proposed, it's really understood as the ICANN Ombuds subgroup of the work stream to an accountability is proposing. Because too much personalization sometimes gets some wrong assumption and wrong feedback. Now I will go to the recommendation number 11, and It reads as follows. The following point should be considered and clarified publicly when looking at Ombuds' involvement in any non-complaints work. Whether there is unique value that the Ombuds can add through the proposed role or function, whether the proposed reporting accountability arrangement may compromise perceived independence, whether the proposed role function would limit the Ombuds' ability to subsequently review a matter, whether the workload of the proposed role function would limit the Ombuds' ability to prioritize their complaint-related work, whether any Ombuds' involvement with the design of new or revised policy or process creates the impression of a seal of approval, whether the proposed Ombuds' input may be seen as a shortcut or substitute for full stakeholder consultations. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. Any comments on 11? Jeff types in the chat that the questions are all good, are valid ones. Any further comments? Another positive statement from David McCauley. Thanks for that. There doesn't seem to be any further comment or opposition. So we seem to be able to conclude on this. Now there's one remaining small aspect, and that is we wanted to get back to Cherith as rapporteur for the SOAC accountability team to comment on the question of the remit of the Ombuds for policy-related issues. Cheryl,
Well, I can but try. Cheryl Langdonor for the record. From an accountability point of view, we only had out of Workstream one nexus that we felt was going to be clearly in the Ombuds remit, and that in by and large has not particularly changed with the end of our work in Workstream 2. However, there is remit in the Ombuds office as currently designed. None of the changes from the Ombuds report, external examiner's report, and indeed these recommendations are making any changes to that remit. But what there is a possibility and a welcome one in some of the expanding roles for earlier intervention on some process concerns, for example, if under accountability good practices, a certain advertised form of electoral process was going on in a SO or AC. And at a future point in time, a member of that SO or AC community felt that that process as advertised and published was not being carried out, then the Ombuds could indeed look at a set of election, publicly available election processes and see whether or not the rules of the organisation as the organisation part has developed them were fairly and truly exercised. So to that extent, Ombuds could be involved, but in an accountability thing, but not in a policy per se. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cheryl, for these clarifications. And I think with respect to that point, it would potentially be worthwhile for the subgroup to further specify sort of a carve-out, as you described, to make this clear to the reader of the report. With respect to Caboose's question, Caboose, I guess there have been attempts to respond to your question. Maybe that hasn't been sufficiently clear, I suggest we take this offline and confirm it offline to save time during this call now. With respect to Fazi's question, Fazi, your concern about independence was reflected in the first reading on recommendation 9, not making it through the plenary. So your concern will be taken back to the sub-team for further deliberations on the concerns expressed. And obviously your concerns or your request has been supported by some in the plenary. Jeff, if you could please keep it very brief, because I'd really like to move on to the HR report. Jeff, please.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff Newman. Sorry. So, Cheryl, just so I understand, I completely agree with the notion of that IRP should not be for ombudsman should not be for policy matters for SOAC groups. The question I have is a real situation that I've seen happen before, where let's say one of the constituencies fails to accept someone as a member of that constituency, despite the fact that they think that they're qualified. In the past, you know, if you went to the ombudsman should come to a successful resolution. If they are not satisfied with that, I guess what you're not saying is, so I'm just trying to think of what the next step is at that point. Do they go to the board and then would it be an IRP type thing? I'm just, again, trying to follow that chain through.
If I may respond, Thomas?
Yes, and I guess that should be the last comment on this, and maybe you can then agree to join the subsequent sub-teams call to get the substantive discussion sorted in that forum. But please go ahead, Chair.
Thank you, Thomas. Of course, you know I'm already in that team, so I assume you're talking to Jeff. Cheryl Langdonor for the record. Look, Jeff, you of course asked a point that was not policy, which was the reason I was responding earlier, but in fact you've chosen an exact example that I inherited when I became chair of the at-large advisory committee and of what could only be described as a toxic relationship between the ombudsman and the at-large advisory committee and at-large in general, which took, I suppose, all of 6 weeks to fix. And so, in fact, the issue was exactly as you outlined, and significant changes which are working to this very day were put into place in the ALACS internal policies to ensure that the issues that the Ombuds report at that time brought out never repeated themselves. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cheryl. That's very helpful. Now, with respect to this set of recommendations, clearly, I guess it's fair to say that it didn't make the first reading on this call. We have a couple of points for clarification and further debate. I would encourage the sub-team to work on this as soon as possible, so that hopefully we can get an updated report for the plenary meeting on the 11th. And if we're lucky, we can do the successful first reading on the 11th and then use the other meeting on the 18th to get the successful second reading. Okay, we have 20 minutes left. Staff is warning me that this might not be enough time for the HR recommendations, and it's certainly not my intention not to do justice to the HR sub-team's work. Nonetheless, I think we just need to plow forward and get that on the table and get the discussion going. So, Niels, if you could please get started, if we could get the right slide into the Adobe room so that we can get the presentation going. And let me hand over and thank the Ombuds sub-team and particularly Sebastian for taking us through the recommendations and for this discussion. Thanks for the hard work. Over to you, Niels.
Thank you very much, Thomas, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. I'm very happy we are together again to discuss human rights. We've been working on this through many months of intense discussions. We learned a lot from each other, and I think in the subgroup we also built quite a bit of expertise because people with from a lot of different backgrounds came together, which really contextualized our knowledge and helped us build a consensus. So jointly we forged these words in a fire of heat debate and discussions, and we grew accustomed to these words. So all the words in the FOI and considerations documents have their story now because they've been all discussed at great length. And all these sentences have become interrelated with months of discussions. So it's really good to have the whole group look closely at this so we can benefit from the reflections, because we as a group have been really staring a lot at this text. So this is not my presentation. So what is the good thing, what will not cost a lot of time, is that we have not made a lot of significant changes since the last time we have been reading the framework of interpretation and considerations document here before we went into public comment. That is not at all because we did not spend a lot of time with the public comments. Quite the opposite. We have had a lot of meetings in which we discussed the public comments that have been brought to us. But we haven't been able to come up with really significant changes that we could come on consensus on. So a recap of the major milestones. The subgroup approved draft recommendations for the plenary considerations, that is 2 December 2016 meeting, and the plenary approved the draft recommendations for public consultation 11 January, and we had the public consultation. And we responded to all public comments that were made on the draft, and we have made the final recommendations with a minority opinion. Next slide, please. We have had 11 respondents during the public consultation period. And as said, no significant changes were made. We have made an overview in which also shows per comment that has been made how we evaluated it. A lot of the comments actually did not ask us to make changes. Some comments asked us to go beyond the scope of the subgroup, which we, of course, carefully took care of that we did not do that. And then some comments also suggested we make changes that we could not reach consensus on in the subgroup, and that has resulted in a minority opinion. So the two changes that we have made that are not significant is a change to a footnote where it says where we referred to including. And then listed a list of human rights declarations and treaties. And now that became including but not limited to. And the second change we made was a spelling grammar issue. So nothing consequential. So let's go to the content of the minority opinion. Next page, please. So the dissenting opinion is based on the serious concern of the subgroup's treatment of the substantial comments and proposals submitted during the public comment by the governments of Brazil, Switzerland, and the UK for all active members of the GACS Human Rights and International Law Working Group. Their expectations was that their comments would result in changes, but we were not able to agree on changes during the subgroup's call, even though the comments have been discussed at length. Next slide, please. So the dissenting opinion was supported by Brazil, Switzerland, the UK, but also by Iran and by the government of Peru. And the main content or the main issue of this comment was that there should be a stronger reference made to the UN guiding principles on business and human rights in the document. It mentions stronger because the UN guiding principles on business and human rights are already mentioned part of the document. So because we haven't been able to come to a consensus, we fall back to the previous consensus position, and that was the document that we submitted for public comment itself. It has to be said that the UN guiding principles for business and human rights have also been part of the discussion before the public comment. So as said, we have discussed this issue at length in the subgroup, so it would be great to also hear from the people outside of the subgroup to hear what they think and also to give us guidance how we can move forward. And here I'd like to hand it back to Thomas.
Thanks very much, Niels. Let's see whether there are any comments or questions. I see Tatiana's hand is up. Tatiana, please, and then Hawker.
Thank you very much. Tatiana Chopina is speaking for the record. I will try to be brief. So as far as I understand, after a few weeks after this dissenting opinion has been submitted, and just a few hours before the call, Niels sent the proposal for the new text for this plenary to decide upon. I didn't have time to weigh in there because I'm traveling, I'm in transit, and I didn't have enough time. I would like to highlight one thing, and I believe that my fellow group member Matthew Shears also objected based on the same opinion. The text which we proposed was discussed many times, and we all met in the middle. Jorge was a part of the first drafting team who decided on this RAGI principles text, and we all reached consensus because we actually sacrificed some of our opinions. Right now, in this proposed text, if this plenary is going to recommend something to the human rights subgroup, I think that it cannot be done in the 10 minutes remaining for this call, because there are many implications for mentioning RAGI, and I believe that to make an informed decision, to give an informed opinion, this respected subgroup, accountability group, should be informed about the length of our discussions and about the arguments. So I believe that we just don't have enough time to really recommend something. Like 3 minutes of intervention is not enough to explain all the implications we discussed in the group. Thank you. I just want you to know that there are objections to this text. Thank you.
Thanks, Tatiana. Jorge?
Hello. Good evening. Do you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
I just want to jump in into the discussion because as I understood, Niels mentioned the dissenting opinion that we filed last August after the discussions had in the subgroup, and this dissent in the end was a consequence of the public comment inputs made by my government, by the government of Brazil, and the government of the United Kingdom, because we felt that the had not taken them enough into account. So this dissent was filed around 1 month ago,
and we have listened very closely to the discussions had in the subgroup and also on the list. And that's why some days ago when this issue was on the agenda of the CCWG plenary, we proposed that there would be a chance for a broader consensus, some small changes to the text of the framework of interpretation that would take into account these public comments. Today, in the line of those public comments, I have filed with the CCWG list a text proposal, which is intended as a common ground proposal that differs quite significantly from the text we had initially proposed in the public comments, and which tries to build a bridge to the other positions expressed in the subgroup, and which had a majority in the subgroup. And I'm not sure if we are going to see that text. At least the text was circulated like 8 hours ago in the CCWG emailing list, and it has received support from different members of this group and participants. I think that there have been at least six or seven supporting voices. It's true that in the subgroup there are some who are still objecting to such a common ground proposal. And I'm sure that apart from these six or seven supporting people, the other governments that had filed the dissent together with me would perhaps be amenable to such a compromise solution. So I'm not sure if we want to get into looking into that text. And if that is the case, I would try to introduce it.
Jorge, I'm afraid we have only 6 minutes left on this call. So we're going to hear Greg and David. After David, the queue is closed. And then we're going to take stock and adjourn. Greg, please.
Greg Shatton, for the record. I did have some time to look at Jorge's proposal as a member of the subgroup and as a member of the plenary. Unfortunately, I can't support it. And I will note that in addition to the six or seven, perhaps, that Jorge counts as being in favor, all but one or two of whom seem to be in the GAC, that there are several statements on the list not in support. So, if anything, it would appear that there's no consensus at best. Second, unfortunately, we were supplied only with the statement in isolation, other than with a single introductory sentence. If you look at the actual context where it's being placed, and if you look at the report as a whole, you'll see two things. One, it's directly contradictory to the section discussing the UN guiding principles in the considerations portion of the document, which expressly states that there was no consensus in the as to how to apply or that one should apply the UNGP to the core value itself, but that it could provide guidance in the implementation of the core value. This was a very carefully negotiated, balanced concept, which no one would have written on their own, but which the vast majority of the group wrote together, as most consensus positions end up being. Second, where it's been placed, it's being put into the middle of the definition of internationally recognized human rights and into the middle of a discussion of international human rights instruments only apply to states. Both editorially and substantively, it makes no sense. If it had been presented in full, and or if everyone took the time that I did to look at it in context, and I've sent this to the list so others can see this, I think it would be more apparent that, unfortunately, in execution and in thought, it lacks a lot. Finally, there's certainly no expectation that the comments will be, while they are always considered and taken into account, depending upon what you think taken into account means, that they will be accommodated or change the position of subgroup or plenary. Really, you know, there is no expectation of that, nor should there be. While I wish that I could support a compromise statement, this is not a compromise statement, nor is it well crafted. And even if it were, the substance does not move from where the position was and does not accommodate the concerns of the rest of the group. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. David?
Thomas, thank you. I have some comments, but given the shortness of the hour, I think I'll just wait till the next meeting.
Okay. Thanks very much. Now, it appears like the HR subteam has submitted a report and there were some last-minute changes that are controversial in the subteam itself. So I think that given this controversy, the subteam needs to take this back and discuss this so that we get a report to the plan has a status of being confirmed by the subteam. I think it was interesting, though, to get some views, but I guess it clearly showed that the plenary doesn't have sufficient information to take a decision today. We have 1 minute left in this call, so I'm afraid that we need to end this discussion for today. There will be another plenary on the 11th, and let me now hand over to my fellow co-chair Jordan for closing remarks and adjournment.
Thanks, Thomas. Yeah. Nils, is that you?
Yeah, I'm very sorry. Thomas, I have to ask whether we can please schedule this for the next plenary and not just point this back to the subgroup, because I think in the subgroup we have managed to come to a consensus with the minority statement. I think if we want to get rid of the minority statement, I think it would be due to have the discussion in the plenary, not point it back to the subgroup, because I think at the subgroup I'm not sure how much we can move, and we would really like to have some more time to discuss this in the plenary if possible.
We will definitely have this topic on the agenda for the next plenary. Thomas, do you want to add anything more to that?
No, I just wanted to confirm that we're going to discuss it at the next meeting, and if you as rapporteur inform us that the report is ready to be debated and vetted by the plenary, so be it. That's fine. Over to you, John.
Thanks. Look, everyone, thank you for the discussion today. The only point I wanted to make really is that we're coming into another one of those crunch times for this group and its work. And I just want to remind everyone that no matter how strongly held our views are, we're at a stage in the process where we can either finish through second readings in Abu Dhabi and get things out for public comment from the community, or if we don't do that, essentially that the work of the subgroup that doesn't manage that is going to come to an end, because we won't be able to complete it in time for the completion of work stream two. So, and this isn't in particular reference to anything that's just been said recently or earlier on the call, but the point is that we can make decisions with the benefit of public comment, even if we don't all agree fully with all of the material now. The point is to get the consensus in place, so we can ask the community for broader input. And I would just urge everyone to take a kind of spirit of compromise and collaboration and getting through the tough next couple of weeks so we can get to that point. Thanks. And I think with that, we'll adjourn this call and speak to you all on the 11th of October. Thanks, everyone.